Okay. I'm sorry. All right. Today is September 24th, 2020. I'm Ethan Sharp, and I'm here with Carmen.
I'm Carmen Wampler Collins. I'm the Executive Director of Pride Community Services Organization.
And to get started, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background, Carmen, where you
Sure,
were born, where you
sure,
grew up,
sure.
and how you came here to
Sure.
the organization.
I was actually, well, I was born in Indiana, but I was raised primarily in Moorhead, Kentucky. My family's from Eastern Kentucky in that area, and I grew up in Elliott and Round counties of Kentucky.
Okay.
And so that's where my family is. That's where my
Yeah.
roots are. I went away to college, so I
Yeah.
lived in Massachusetts for about, 15 or 16 years.
Okay.
And while I was there, I came out as a lesbian. I met my wife there. We started our family, and then when we had our first son, we moved back to Kentucky because we wanted to try being closer to family.
Right.
So we moved to Moorhead for a while, and then
Okay.
when that we didn't find the schools and things we wanted, we actually got involved with a parenting group that was run through the PCSO
Okay.
at that time,
Okay.
and we made friends in Lexington, and they convinced us to give Lexington a try before we went so far away.
Okay.
So we did, and it's worked
Okay.
out.
That's good. That's
Yeah.
good.
So I was sort of involved with the PCSO for a few years as, using their services, and then I volunteered some with the youth group here. But it wasn't until actually, Moorhead is the place where the Kim Davis stuff happened. And so when marriage equality happened, when the Supreme Court justices made that legal, my wife and I had had an ongoing conversation. For those of us, who have been together for a long time, it just seemed impossible that it was really it was really gonna happen. And she kept saying, "I don't think so." I'm like, "No, it's gonna be this year. It's really gonna happen." And she was like, "Not in Kentucky. You wait, something will happen." And so I remember texting her the day, that the governor was like, "Start issuing licenses today." And then that night we heard that in Moorhead
They
it
weren't
wasn't
doing
happening.
it.
Yeah, and so being from there, I was furious and felt really like I needed to get involved because, I mean, one of the things that people say about that is, they're bringing in people from out of town. This isn't really pertinent to our community. And having grown up there, I just felt like I needed to say, especially for younger people and people who still live in that community who may not be able to make a stand, that, we're your kids, we're your people, we're here. And so we went up really just to get involved, to help with the protests. There was a group of people, I have to say, it was really heartwarming that came out immediately, came out of the woodwork to say, "This is not okay. We don't want this in our community." And so we joined and started going up and just holding signs. And when we were there, somebody was like, you should go apply for a license. We need, we don't know what the ACLU is going to need." And my sister was like, she was mad, and she wanted me to go. So we went and
Oh, you
applied.
did
We
it?
did.
You see
We
Kim
did, and we
Davis?
got interfaced with Kim Davis directly and got denied and made her say it to our faces. And yeah, and so then after that, we were involved. There was a group that
And that
formed
was 2015.
2015,
2015, okay.
I know this is a longer story than maybe you
No, but this
want
is
to know.
great. This
Okay,
is, I
all
love
right.
this.
So we got involved. A group formed called Round County Rights Coalition. The idea was to form a group of progressive-minded people to keep not just on LGBTQ rights, but on other rights in Round County. And we became a part of that organization. And so through this, once Kim Davis went to jail for, and so they needed a couple to test what was going to happen after she was released, and nobody was stepping up. So my wife and I ended up being the first
Oh, you
couple that
did?
applied for a license after she was out of jail. So, yeah, and it was probably good that we didn't know what we were stepping into as far as media, and it was, I mean, it was an amazing day. But had I known, I mean, CNN was there and the
Everyone was there.
whole, yeah, it was really a, but being involved in that work, and it was really, I'd been out for years, and I wasn't afraid of being out, but it's still a little bit of different thing standing in the place where you grew up across from the place your grandmother lived to say, "Oh, here I am, I'm making my stand." So, it was a lot, but I mean, I'm really glad that we did it. And because of that,
And she granted the license
she,
that
well,
whole
she
time.
didn't, but she, they made it so that anyone in her office could do
Oh,
it.
I
So
see.
her, Brian, I can't think of his last name, but he was a peach through the whole thing. And he worked for her. He was a gay man. And he had said all along.
He worked for her all that time.
Mm-hmm, he did. And he had said all along that he would issue the licenses, but she wasn't letting anybody. And so that's the how she made her way around it. He did it.
She
wouldn't sign it. She put a little statement on it rather than putting her signature.
Wow.
And then, you know, a few weeks later, they changed the license anyway. But
wow.
Yeah, but we continued to stay involved with that group and got involved in organizing the first Moorhead Pride. And so
mm-hmm.
with that, I found I was really interested in working with the LGBTQ community. You know, we worked some with Fairness Campaign, and I'm like, you know, I think I should be doing
this.
And so I was, at the time, my background was really in, I'd worked in affordable housing.
Okay.
And at that point, I had kind of gone out on my own and was doing development and grant writing as a freelancer for mostly for affordable housing, nonprofits.
And so I
just needed something to supplement my income.
Right.
And I, you know, freelancing is hard. You know, you're always alone. So
yeah.
I needed some. So when they actually had an office manager position here, and I'm like, oh, I think that would be something I'd really enjoy, and it would give me a little more income. So that's how I started, and that's like a little over 3 years ago. And I did just come in and love, you know, just fell in love with it.
Right.
And they knew early on. I mean, they're like, your skills are beyond this, so you can take this to whatever you want it to be.
Right.
And so they knew I had the fundraising skills. And so 6 months in, we had a conversation about, you know, I can just be your office manager if you want, but if you want me to do more, here's what I see and where we need to go and what, you know. And so then last year, was it last year? Time seems like all different now. So in August or September of 2019, they eventually, I was hired as an executive director.
Right.
So I was at the point where I can't keep doing this. I have to either step the work that I'm doing way back, or you're going to have to, you know, invest a little more and pay me. So fortunately they did. And that's kind of how how I came to do this professionally.
And PCSO, can you give us some background on
that?
So it was obviously,
it's been around, it's actually probably the oldest existing LGBTQ organization in Kentucky and one of the oldest in the nation.
Yeah.
So it really formed back in the days of, you know, it was the late 70s. It's funny, if you look at other LGBTQ groups and their histories, they all sort of followed a model, and like it was called the GLSO then, which was a Gay and Lesbian Services Organization. You know, and if you look at LA, they had the same, you know, they were all very similar, they were part of that group of first sort of pride organizations.
Yeah.
So really they were founded, it was a group of UK students, and they were not allowed to have a same-sex dance on campus.
Wow.
And so they kind of came out into the community to start a support group on their own, and that's how it was founded. And so from the beginning, it was really just looking around to see what needs were in the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm.
It was mostly gay men at that time.
Okay.
And just they had a phone, a hotline. Even back, we produce Link Magazine now, but that came out of a newsletter that started.
Yeah.
They've always been doing some kind of publication to the community. And just holding events, dances, socials, like, and connecting people.
Right.
And so that evolved over time. You know, they added the L, the lesbian,
later.
And then as we've evolved, we've changed to Pride to be ever more inclusive.
Right.
You know, during the 80s, with AIDS, I mean, that was the big focus for a lot of people. And the GLSO at that time was really responsible for, because doctors, you know, medical personnel wouldn't see folks with AIDS at all. And so AVOL, which is now one of our big AIDS services organizations, came out of the GLSO.
Yeah, it did.
And then so there are a couple of things like that. ACT OUT, which is a theater group, started with
the
GLSO. And so it was in the 90s, I think, that, that finally a group community effort came together to raise money for an actual Pride Center. It wasn't just the GLSO, but other groups. And then GLSO eventually came to be the place where that money was going to rest. And
and so the
community really came together, built walls. You know, we were upstairs first, and then I think moved into this location.
It's
been here since the 90s. And it always, you know, it's looked a little different over the years, but always has had the same mission of just improving the lives of LGBTQ people. I mean, and things like when I first started coming, there was a sort of take one, leave one book, you know, little library. And this has evolved into a full library. We've had the UK librarians came in and actually created an organizational system that didn't exist for LGBTQ library. They have actually been internationally recognized for this. This is our little secret gem. So, you know, and there we all have scan codes and a real circulation system now. But, you know, the heart of it, like, you know, groups come and go. We kind of respond to what the needs of the community are. My focus, I really hope we're able to do things that impact basic needs for the LGBT community. And we've started that with our food pantry, People's Market food pantry. And we had a terrific response. And, of course, the pandemic hit. And, you know, in a number of weeks, we tripled the number of people that we were serving. And we're hoping to do some more. I really have a dream of working on employment issues. And so that's sort of twofold, helping our community get skills, you know, with resumes, those kind of things on that end, but also training employers to really be LGBTQ affirming and not just stamp a label on that, but to know what that means and to create safe workspaces for people.
That's what you're working toward.
That's what we're working toward, And we run, we currently also run, I think it's about 8 different groups, the social and support groups. We have you know, people think of us as a place to go for help, but we also do have groups like the sci-fi and horror group, and we have a role-playing RPG group where people who just want to socialize and have fun. You don't have to be in trouble to come here and hang out and meet people. But then we do have, you know, peer support group on Wednesday nights, heart to heart, and then Lovable, which is our, it's a support group for folks with disabilities and chronic illnesses. So we have those kinds of things too.
And you also connect folks to other resources.
We do, and that's a big, big part of what we do is actually we kind of serve as a hub. So people hear about us if they need help. We maintain an internal resource list, you know, of different legal help, medical help, you know, so we can tell people, help them get LGBTQ affirming resources, hopefully.
If
those don't exist, I mean, sometimes when people are looking for housing, we do know which shelters are more LGBTQ affirming, but we also can just connect you with resources in the community, food stamps
just
and,
the basics,
you know, the basics. And so people have someone to walk them through that.
So maybe you could talk about, you know, the pandemic, sort of how you saw it coming, and then what how did it change the organization?
Well, I think like
with
for
the shutdown and all
I think for a lot of people, I remember clearly we had an intern working who was following the news of the pandemic when it was in China, and he was like, "Are you worried at all?" I'm like, "No, no," and we kind of discussed, and we're both like, "Nah, it probably won't be a big deal. We may have to, you know, keep our distance or, you know, but it's, I don't think it's really going to affect us." And, you know, within a week, we went from, we have to be cautious, maybe put some protocols in place to closing. So it was really quick. And it was, I was working with a couple of people, you know, interns who it was really thought on their feet. And so at that point we were doing, we had started our food bank program, but people were coming in, you know, it was, we did it multiple days a week and we let people come in and shop and pick what they wanted. And so we were like, how do we keep, that was the thing we knew we didn't want to lose. We consolidated it to one day a week. We called the God's Pantry, who we work with for donations, and let them know we were going to do that. And then moved to, instead of people coming in, we prepare boxes and deliver them out to the parking lot. Not really open yet. So we focused on, you know, what we could keep doing. And so we consolidated that to one day a week. And that seemed to work well. And then everything else we took home with us. So we started answering emails and answering phone calls. We took turns transferring phones home. And at that point we implemented a check-in list so people could sign up if they wanted someone to call them, like, or text them on a weekly basis just to check in and see how they were doing. And then even for people that, people who we knew well, regulars, we just started doing that. So like the staff and I would be like, "How you doing?" you know, what are you? Just so people had a sense that we were still here and, you know, they could reach out to us and that kind of thing.
So basically with the governor's orders, you had to shut down.
Yeah. we really did.
So
and
you couldn't have people coming in and out, but you had that one day a week.
We had that one day a week, and then we just used really strict protocols. People wear masks, gloves, sanitize, stay 6 feet apart. We kept everybody outside because that was an essential service. And through the governor's orders, anybody that was providing food, you could continue to run that.
Right.
So. Yeah, so that, and that's, we focused on that as our main source here.
That's great that
and
you're doing that.
Yeah, and then we, at that time, we talked about doing virtual things, and honestly, for everybody, it was over. Like, our groups are all moderated by volunteers, and so just the different things people were experiencing personally or the pandemic, people weren't up for continuing that at that moment.
Right.
Like, everybody was like, let's just take a break.
Right.
And see what happens, and you know, so so that's initially what we did,
and
it's,
that would have been mid-March.
Mid-March, and so we expected we'd reopen the first week of April. That's what
we
told
everybody
at that time.
Yeah,
you know, obviously that didn't happen.
No, no.
That's really how we operated for, and it went a lot longer than we expected. I had really hoped to reopen by June. Then in late May, I fell and broke my arm, upper femur. And, you know, it wasn't really probably time to open anyway, but that's the date I had set for myself. So I went to the board and they were just like, look, just don't, it's okay. We can keep operating as we are.
Wow.
Yeah. And we were still doing plenty of work.
Yeah.
In the background,
you know.
And we were still taking the calls and answering the emails and referring people to what resources were out there.
Right.
So I didn't feel like we were abandoning people, but it was a big change, especially for the group of people who are used to seeing each other here.
Yeah.
And so then I started coming.
You had your arm in a cast?
It was in a sling. Oh, so with a shoulder break like that, they don't really cast it.
Oh,
they want the gravity to work on it.
Yeah.
So yeah, for 6 weeks.
Now it seems all better.
It's not complete. I'm still in physical therapy,
okay,
but it's
good.
Much, much better.
Good,
but I couldn't even type at that point.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah, in the midst of everything else.
Yeah, in the midst of everything else. And then I had stuff with my sister and personal life going on. So the whole time just seemed like chaos.
Sure.
It was just, and the school, I have a 17-year-old. So, and my oldest son was, a VISTA service member in the NCCC program, and so he was away in Iowa, but they sent everybody home.
So he came back.
So there were all four of us in the house trying to. It was pretty amusing. Some days, like, we had multiple meetings, like in the bedroom, in the living room. And,
Of course.
And so.
So you would, you know, stay in touch with the board and.
Stay in touch with the
staff,
board and the staff,
Zoom.
And I came in sometimes when we were closed and worked in here.
Okay.
Yeah, we had Zoom meetings with our interns, you know, once a week.
Okay.
We did have a VISTA service person here, and they ended up not coming back afterward.
Okay.
That it
okay.
just didn't work out to do the distance, and they were.
But you
already.
Had the two interns. You were working
we had
with?
Yeah, we had a practicum student from UK School of Social Work, and then a VISTA placement service member at that time. So, but they were both really did do excellent work in helping us. Keep things. Blake, who was from the UK School of Social Work, even after he'd completed his, because social work took everybody out of the space. They're like, you can't show up. So he completed his hours virtually and then came in to volunteer for us after. He was so committed to the food bank and to the work that we do.
Yeah, but all through that period, you kept with the food bank.
Oh,
yeah.
It was, and it was, so several things. Well, one thing that we were really concerned about was the LGBTQ community does have a lot of risk factors that make us at higher risk
about,
for COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's one of the reasons we didn't mind being very cautious. Like, you know, there's some groups, our seasoned independent people group is what they call it. SIP is for people 50 and over, and it's one of our biggest groups.
Yeah.
But our primary activity with them was to have a dinner here, buffet style, once a month.
You did that. Yeah.
And we didn't. We stopped. We had to stop. I mean, there was people, older folks with medical issues, and to have, you know, 30, 40 people in this space, there's just no way.
Yeah.
And we haven't, I'm actually going to start doing, you know, we contacted those people and stayed in touch with them via email and follow-ups. But we're still looking for a way to convert that because we still can't have that many people safely in this space. And so whether we'll start to try to, the problem with that community is a lot of them are not electronically savvy. They're not going to be able to jump on a Zoom meeting.
Yeah.
So we've talked about whether we could do a conference call, you know, and deliver like boxed dinners because we can't do the buffet thing.
Right.
Or we may start scheduling. What we've found since the pandemic for older folks especially, they will drop in individually. They'll call and say, can I just come in and see you? And like, that's the best interaction we've had. It's just a one-on-one.
Right.
Like have a cup of coffee, or you know, had a couple come in and have lunch with me the other day.
That's awesome.
So I don't know the answer to that yet. We're still trying to figure out how to provide the connection that people need without putting them at risk.
So what are some of the things that you're hearing from them? I can imagine that's really
it's been very difficult. It's really really tough. And you know, one of the things, and we hope to expand it. For a very small number of people right now, mostly elderly folks or people with disabilities, we're doing grocery delivery. And so that human contact they have is hugely important to them. It's like just to see somebody, and you know, one of our regulars who he'd been a regular SIP dinner attendee and had used us for other services, and he's like, just every Wednesday, that nice young person shows up, and it's a little boost for my week.
I'm sure, I can imagine.
It's really, but I worry most about folks who, you know, were already sort of isolated because of physical, and it's hard. I mean, I know it's hard, but at the same, we keep trying to offer different opportunities, and people still aren't really willing. To, you know, they have to keep themselves safe. So we do.
But those are the folks that you were checking in on.
Those,
like,
we're checking in on, and we're trying to find other ways to connect with. Through email, through Facebook, some, and you know, other ways.
But you ultimately did open in June. Or
it, no, it wasn't until like August. I mean, it was really, it started being. I had expected like a big. This will be the day, and what happened is I just gradually started coming in and working more, and then in August. I started coming, but we had school started, and so we take interns from UK every year, and so they needed to start working, and so in August we started that, and and now we're just about. I still work from home some mornings before we're open, but we're pretty much back to our groups are still all over the place. So the other thing I haven't talked about, the big, big way this impacted us too, was, you know, we produced the Pride Festival, which is a big deal for so many people. And I think for me and for a lot of us, there's a lot of grief around, you know, having to say we can't do this way this year. And that's still lingering. I mean, we did in June, we did a march with the BLM movement because we decided it just didn't feel appropriate to do like any kind of celebratory pride activities at that moment. And we started planning for October, and you know, then we thought we'd be able and so it's been just like layers of like acceptance of this isn't gonna look the same. So we do have an event planned for next weekend, but it's gonna be a very different.
So what is it going to look like?
We still don't even really know, if you can believe it, this close. But the plan is we have the Kentucky Theater, and we will be at least shooting a live show and live casting it to our social media and other outlets so people can watch that from home. Our hope is that we will be able to have a live audience, that we will sell tickets and give tickets away to have people there.
Okay.
But we keep second guessing that every day. There's another discussion about looking at our COVID numbers
and are we
keeping people safe. But we will do that. If we do it with an abundance of caution, we'll have you know, screeners checking temperatures making sure people have masks on and screening for COVID symptoms. So we hope to still be able to do that if nothing changes
between now and then.
But it's been really a frustrating process, I think, everybody, because we've now been working on this thing for well over a year. And it changes on the daily. You know, we just had a performer cancel because they thought it was too risky to come and perform live. So we're tired too. I was having a discussion with one of our committee chairs last night, and we were very frustrated. And then I just got a message from someone who'd picked up from our food bank yesterday, who she's homeless, is living in a hotel. like, doesn't know where she's going to live in a week.
Wow.
And just wrote me a thank you note saying, thank you so much for the food. Thank you so much for you do for the LGBTQ community. My mom never supported me. I wish I could get a free mom hug this year. COVID sucks. I cannot wait until the virtual pride celebration.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
and so I sent that out to people. I'm like, just if you forget while we're doing this and get caught up in the details, like, it's just important that we let people know we're still here and they're still supported and loved. And
so they'll be able to connect from wherever they are.
So yeah.
Awesome.
So, I mean, we're
at least there's something.
There's something. There's
good.
Something.
That's good.
Well,
could you talk about the march a little bit? I was going to ask you about that later, but, you know, what was that like?
It was really great. And for us as an organization, we have really been, anyway, trying to move toward being an anti-racist organization.
Okay.
And so it felt like a real natural fit. The board was very supportive. Like, we had to move really quickly to kind of change things around. And I had a good relationship with BLM organizers in the area. So we just reached out to them and we're like, look, we want to work with you. We don't want to come in. And they were very, you know, very excited about it. They helped us make a flag with the, you know, power fist on the rainbow flag.
Yeah,
and so a lot of their folks too identified as LGBTQ.
Right,
and for us, that's a, being that our history is really founded in, you know, there wouldn't have been a queer rights movement without the, you know, civil rights movement.
Right.
There really would not have been.
Yeah.
And that, you know, black trans people really started our civil rights movement. It, you know, our board chair, board president, who's a black woman, you know, was asked the question of how do you distinguish between the two. She's like, there is no separation. You cannot separate one from the other.
Right.
So for us, it felt like a really natural fit, and it went really well. I mean, they were, I think it gave energy to some of the protesters who had been out every day to have some new energy and blood there to support that and to stand with them.
Yeah,
and so we're still looking for other ways to continue
so
that.
You just had a march.
We had a march, and so we let them really, because the folks who had been protesting already sort of had a protocol in place for what the marches looked like. You know, we had to make sure our people, you know, you're listening to them, they keep things nonviolent, and you know, they'll tell us what to do, and you know, and so they really did that. And they made it great for other people, you know, in our community to speak up and have a chance to speak.
So it was a time when people spoke.
When people spoke. Yeah, we had our, formerly, Wanda McCants, who's our board president, spoke. And, you know, the LPD accountability folks had someone speak. And then, you know, we did the march. And then at the end, they invited in everybody. And there were some really passionate, eloquent things from other people in the community.
Sure.
And, it was really a joyful day at the end of it. Like, it felt was really good energy.
Yeah, that's great. Well, maybe we could talk about sort of broad picture, you know, how is the LGBTQ community affected by the pandemic in intersecting ways? And you've already touched on that, but, you know, I know there are, you know, certain populations that are more vulnerable because of, you know, their age or because of HIV status.
So
there's a whole range of issues.
There's a whole range of issues, and I think one of the broader things that we saw immediately and saw, you know, by the use in our food bank is already the LGBTQ community is at risk with jobs and, you know, have a hard time finding work or at least places where they can be out. And I think that situation has gotten worse. You know, undoubtedly people have lost jobs just because of pandemic closings or because of health issues, had to quit working. So, I mean, that's definitely been an issue.
I know
we're going to be doing some hiring soon. In the downtime, the great thing is we got a couple of grants. I was able to focus on some of that.
Awesome.
So we are going to be able to do a hire for a full-time job and a part-time job. But the intense interest in those jobs is almost overwhelming. People are, you know, already chomping at the bit, and we haven't even posted the openings.
Wow.
So,
so people know about it and they're asking about it. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a big deal, and making sure that...
But you feel like the community's been more affected by the loss of employment than...
Because I think we have people who are already on the edge. You know, they're doing whatever they can to make... And I think that's true for the whole community, but especially for the trans community,
yeah.
is, you know, it is very, very difficult in Lexington, even in this day and age,
yeah.
for trans people, especially if they don't pass, to find work
right,
where they
right,
can
right,
be out, or work,
right,
period,
right,
you know?
Right.
And so I think when you already have a situation like that, and then, you know, there are fewer jobs,
right,
you know, when their
right,
financial
right,
security is
right,
threatened.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And so our response is, you know, it is to focus on the food bank, but also to make sure we connect people to resources, mainstream resources in the area, that they're aware of them and know how to access
yeah,
those kinds
yeah.
of things, like housing
mm-hmm.
assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
And we do. We're fairly lucky here that most of those resources are LGBTQ affirming. Like, people, they may not advertise it, and people may not know that.
Right.
But, you know, God's Pantry, that's how our food pantry
right.
program got started, is they had a donor who wanted their food donations to go to the LGBTQ community. So they came to us, and in hearing what we did, they were like, look, we can help you.
Yeah,
you
awesome.
Know, we want to feed
yeah.
this community.
Yeah.
So there has been, throughout Lexington, with Nourish Lexington, a larger group that have come together to say, how can we feed people? You know, how can we help people during
right,
this time?
Right.
And they've been very inclusive. Like, Nourish has found out we were doing a pantry and contributed prepared meals to us.
Awesome.
And we've been a part of that group to figure
yeah.
out how to extend services
yeah.
to
yeah.
more people.
Yeah.
And I'm always the voice, because most of these places serve neighborhoods, and I'm like, our community is
yeah.
spread throughout, so how
yeah.
are you
yeah.
sure that you are reaching LGBTQ people? Because
right.
you have to say it. People won't assume, and that's what
right.
a lot of people don't understand, is that if I don't see your rainbow, if you're not telling me, and especially if you're associated with a church, or, you know, a lot of LGBTQ people are not going to think that's for them.
Right.
yeah.
yeah.
Or
true.
Not going to want to have to endure
right. right.
that situation.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So there's been, yeah, a lot of just helping refer people to resources
yeah,
that are out
yeah,
there.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then, you know, what about sort of the access to counseling and,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
mental health support?
Yeah, so we have done a lot of that. We keep an internal list, but there also have been a couple of groups in the area who've been offering free or really discounted
yeah.
counseling. So
yeah.
we have... We keep those on hand, and,
yeah.
you know, if people need it, we know where to send
yeah.
folks. And then, you know, and we do still do, you know, there's a difference in someone who, and there are people who need counseling, but we're also still a sounding board if people just need to connect
right,
or a voice
right,
to talk to.
Right.
I mean, we are very much here for that,
right.
just if people need to chat. Like, you
right,
don't even
right,
have to have
right,
a problem.
Right,
So, but we have seen... an increase in need for that, and
right,
a couple
right.
of providers in the area have really been responding. There are more telehealth resources,
right, right,
so we've had to
that's
kind
true.
Of up our
that's
service
true.
Listings to
right,
to
right.
include, and just making sure we have hotline numbers available as
right,
well.
Right,
that's,
right.
Yeah.
Have you seen an increase in sort of requests for those kinds of?
I don't
services.
Know if we can say. I mean, we've seen an increase in just people checking in for
right,
sure.
Right.
For sure, people just calling and checking in and
right.
giving them the whole host of
yeah.
of numbers. Especially when we got back in the office, it seemed like, you know,
yeah.
we had a lot more people coming in. I don't know, but, you know, I don't know if people actually request hotline numbers that often. They
right.
usually will touch base and just kind of say, this is where I'm at.
Right.
And I
okay.
don't, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
yeah.
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 Yeah. But people seem to be hanging in there.
People seem
for
to be.
For the most part. I mean,
people,
despite all of the.
It's hard to. So what I worry about is how much do we know? Like,
right,
it's
right.
the people that you don't hear from.
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
you know, I know people are struggling, but the people I do hear from are usually at least capable of reaching out
right,
and saying,
right,
so
right.
like, are we doing well enough to track the folks? And we try to, like, you know, has anybody heard from this person? Has any, you
yeah.
know, and just kind of check in and make sure
right,
people,
right.
you know, I know some of our, they haven't called us for help, but I actually know some of our regulars have had to go, you know, have actually had to be admitted, to, you
right,
know, for,
right.
for mental health care.
Right,
and,
right.
You know,
right.
a couple actually, now that I think of it.
Yeah.
But it's not the kind of thing where they're calling asking. Well, actually, he did call me. I shouldn't say that. You know, I have to think
yeah.
through what the process
no,
is
no,
because
that's okay.
I mean,
as I said, there's so many issues. That, you know.
Yeah.
So do you think that was a related to the isolation?
I do,
yeah,
I do. And so, I mean, this in particular, the gentleman I'm thinking about, you came in for a lot of different things, and he did reach out to me at one point and say, I think I'm in trouble, I need help.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think of him as, I talk to him all the time, so it
right.
didn't stick in my mind as a, you know, and I'm like, well, if, you know, depending on what it is, here's how you can, you know,
right.
get services. But he did end up having to be admitted,
yeah.
and, you know, and very much misses being here.
Right, I'm sure,
connecting
I'm sure,
with
I'm
people.
Sure.
And the stress, too. I mean, there's the isolation, but there's also just the increased stress of
right,
work and keeping,
right,
you know,
right.
like this particular person was, he had a daughter and she has, you know, he and his wife are divorced. He came out, and but they have a good relationship, but his daughter has issues, so he
yeah.
can't see her at all.
Oh.
You know, and to have to deal with that on top
wow.
of having to put himself in a work situation that isn't necessarily safe, and then
right,
not
right.
having regular contact, I think it was
right,
a,
right,
a
yeah,
huge,
much,
huge strain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. And what about, you also have a group for you,
mm-hmm.
right? Have there been any concerns there?
Well, so they just have stopped. And
really?
So, yeah, and we've talked a little bit about that. So this was in March when everything kind of came to a halt.
Right.
And typically they're lighter in the summer anyway,
right.
so they usually do more. So in talking with the leaders, they wanted to wait to see what happened with school.
Right.
I talked about doing virtual supports, but they were very concerned about having kids in hostile places trying to access a group virtually. That their parents, because a lot of the kids who attend
right.
that group aren't safe at home.
Right.
So what we've ended up doing is there's a great national group. It's qchat.org.
Mm-hmm.
And that was founded by Centerlink, which is the national, or their youth
mm-hmm.
link.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they train LGBTQ center staff to moderate these chat groups. So
okay.
they're live and people can connect
okay.
with other, it's for
okay.
14 to 19 year old kids.
Yeah.
But there's an adult, a responsible adult who's trained
right.
to make sure that the people are not given false information or nothing dangerous is
right.
happening. So it's
right.
not just a bunch of kids
yeah,
yeah, interacting on the
yeah.
internet.
Yeah.
So I have, you know, made sure people have access to that information.
Okay.
And that's another, I really do feel like we're doing the best we can, but with our groups, we just haven't figured it out.
Right.
And so
yeah.
we, even with the groups that we've offered virtual, our Trans Kentucky meets through us, and they have committed to a virtual meeting, but they have very low attendance.
Really?
Yeah, but we've talked with them, and you know, nobody feels safe really coming, because it's another very large group, and overwhelmingly, folks were not interested in coming back in person.
Yeah.
So they have an online.
So the virtual is much less.
Much less. Yeah.
Participation.
Yeah. Much less
before.
Participation
yeah.
so far. And I don't know if that's just a comfort level or if
yeah.
people, I know I get zoomed out. Like I have to do it for work.
Right.
Like I'm on meetings all day long. The last thing I want to do is go to another Zoom event
yeah.
in my off
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
And then for some people just aren't comfortable with that technology too.
Yeah.
So the basically the options we have offered for all of our groups is to they can do group meetings live again as long as it's 10 or less people and all of the, you know, mass social
okay.
distancing, temperature checking and all of that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can do virtual or some combination of
yeah.
both.
Yeah.
And we're just so our heart to heart, which is our core peer support
right.
group on Wednesday nights at 7, they have started again.
Okay.
And so the moderator there at first was really not comfortable doing virtual until he had people ask him directly. And so I think once he found there was a need, he's committed to making that happen. And they
okay.
did that for the first time this week.
Oh, wow.
Is have people that were regulars. So it wasn't just like we're advertising
yeah.
it to the public, but he had people who
just
knew
sort of
wanted to be
it.
Here and
yeah.
couldn't.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, we're going to make this happen for
okay.
them. So, and he has worked really hard to invite people he knows. So they do have a regular group
yeah.
again.
Okay.
So
they meet live and
they
Zoom?
Do.
So
yeah.
combo.
They, combo.
Yeah.
yeah. And so, and we did that with our Love Able group. And we had a pretty good, you know, I mean, it's smaller. It's all in, I mean, we're under 10, but we did
yeah.
have at least one person participate. via Zoom.
Okay.
And I think we're going to have to figure that out too, because especially for that group, there are folks who can't meet in person. But then the moderator of that group, in the midst of everything else, was going to the pharmacy in their wheelchair and got hit by a van. And so on top of the pandemic and already being, so they're at home now for a while.
Okay.
To recover. They're okay. They will be. I mean, they're
yeah.
having to do physical
yeah.
therapy
right.
and they weren't, it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so we've kind of pulled back
right.
on that a little
from
bit.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
the other thing because of the pandemic is typically our groups are all open. People can just come.
Mm-hmm.
But because we're limiting the number of people, we're asking people to call and reserve a spot.
Right, right.
And so I think that also hinders participation. Because
yeah.
for
yeah.
a lot of the groups, especially for new people, it's already hard to make it through the door.
Right,
you know?
Right, right.
And so when you put that added barrier, if I have to give somebody information about
right,
myself in advance
right,
and commit
right,
to being there,
right.
I just think it's another barrier.
Yeah, so
yeah.
That makes it a challenge, especially in reaching new folks.
Yeah,
yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
So I don't have great answers for all of that. We're still
yeah.
trying to work it out,
yeah,
and
yeah,
we're trying to get better. We do think for the long term, it's going to be better for us to have virtual options.
Yeah.
So we're trying to figure out what kind of technology we need. We need better cameras, better microphones
right.
to be able to facilitate
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. I think everyone's in the same
yeah.
in the same boat.
Yeah.
I just wanted to come back to that issue of, you know, youth being in a house where they,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they're not safe or they're just, you know, not accepted.
Yeah.
And, you know, with, you know, families sort of stuck together, I just can't imagine, you know, how they're dealing
yeah.
with that. I don't know if you've had any.
I think, you know, it's the thing that worries
yeah.
me. These are the things like I lose sleep over
yeah.
because I feel like there's a lot we don't know.
Yeah.
And again, those kids are going to be less likely to reach out to us.
Yeah.
So how do we
yeah.
reach that?
Yeah,
and
true,
I mean,
true.
And that's why I think it's important that we keep doing like Pride and we keep doing things in the community. So even with kids that are in unsafe, they can see, you know, there's a visible,
right,
you know, that we're
right,
here,
right,
that we're,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
you're still supported, that we're
right,
still,
right,
yeah.
Right.
And I haven't still done, we are really open now, but I really haven't done a push to say we're here, and that will be upcoming
yeah,
like in the next
yeah.
week or
I mean,
so.
I just wanted to mention that. I know there's obviously challenges in,
yeah.
in how you can help in,
yeah.
in a situation like
yeah.
that. But.
Yeah, but I do see, since we've been reopened, we have seen more, like, drop-ins and new people
yeah.
dropping
yeah,
in.
That's
and
great.
Folks, you know, it felt like when we started being here again, and some days are quieter, but then we'll have this flurry of just new people coming out
yeah,
and new,
awesome.
And I feel like people have been waiting,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
for this opportunity.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. In some ways, it, yeah, might have been beneficial to some people,
mm-hmm.
not certainly not everyone.
Right.
Well, we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but, you know, what are some ways you've seen people responding
creatively
to the pandemic? And
yeah.
you've talked about how the organization has adjusted, but
yeah.
what are some other things you've seen in the community or even nationally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think nationally especially, so we are a member of Centerlink, which
right.
is the national LGBTQ centers, you know,
right,
connected.
Right.
I mean, they're the umbrella group, I guess.
Right, right.
And so it's been really nice to be a part of that and to have a space to, I think especially Pride was a big issue for most groups.
Yeah.
And I'm not exaggerating when saying, I know it's hard for people in the community, but all of us who plan it, there's a great deal of grief.
Yeah.
Because it's our celebration.
Right, right.
It's our time that we reach new people. Like,
right.
you know, every year you see new kids at their first Pride. You
yeah,
see old people
yeah.
who are connecting with friends. And there's just a real sense of loss about
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But it has been really interesting to see what groups around the country are doing. On a national level, several big national groups have done virtual prides and actually have fundraised for Centerlink, and that money eventually trickled through to us. So they've helped fundraise for
yeah.
centers. HRC did a big Can't Stop Pride event back in the summer, and you know, that Centerlink was one of the
mm-hmm.
groups that got
mm-hmm.
the donations from that. And that was a really great, you know,
mm-hmm.
I watched that one. It was just an hour long. Mm-hmm. And it was a really positive, upbeat,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
enjoyable online event.
Yeah, yeah. What's HRC? Human Rights.
Yeah,
Human
Rights Campaign. Human Rights Campaign. And so Centrelink before that on their own worked with the cast of Queer as Folk, and they did a like day long fundraising thing for us. And then there was another one that they have really responded. They knew groups were in trouble, and it was financially. Initially, we were really nervous that we were going to have to cut back services or scale back, because prides are not only a big programmatic event, but that's a lot of our operating income comes from pride. And so, you know, we're suddenly looking at a budget of what do we do?
Right.
We can't.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. And so we were able to participate in the small business loan.
Yeah.
You know, that really helped us
weather
that. And then we were fortunate enough to get some grants to, and people locally. That's another thing I should talk about. Really stepped up to help support us, and knowing it was going to be a financial, the Lexington Fairness Campaign made, you know, a $5,000 donation to pay our rent through the end of the year, because they just wanted us to know, you know, the work you do is important and we need you in the community. And so we did see, you know, some more donations from Centrelink and from other places to help us support us that way. And then that group was very important to kind of talk with other colleagues who are doing this work to figure out what's working, what's not working, where we're still lost, where we still got work to do, and how to sort of respond creatively. And lots of virtual things, lots of, you know, I've seen panels, I've seen, you know, online therapy or support groups, you know, art projects online,
Like what kind of art projects?
Somebody for their Pride Festival actually hired an artist, and who, you know, there are those art and wine things you can go to. So he led people through like a Pride related art project,
like
you do it at your home, but so a lot of different ways of connecting like that.
And social media has that.
I think social media, is it good or is it bad?
I don't know. For me, I
see people, I think it's both. I mean, I think it depends on how you use it. I do think it lets people stay connected.
Yeah.
You know, especially, you know, speaking for me personally, I've sort of, I have to focus on people that I'm friends with and who are positive. Otherwise,
true.
It can be really discouraging. But I do think it allows people to stay connected to what's going on and to their communities.
Yeah.
In
there
an
hasn't
easy.
Been any campaigns on social media.
Oh, campaigns on social media?
Well, and just sort of ways of getting people connected, maybe.
Yeah,
I think.
They
hadn't used it.
Yeah, I think
before.
Some. Yeah, and we initially, early on, did that where, you know, one of our interns was posting every day, hey, what are you doing at home today? And like getting feedback about people gardening and, you know, talking about sort of what's going on in the world.
Nice.
And then, we've seen a lot of different things. Some of the prides, you know, did post your like pride outfit, you know, in different ways to use creatively to make people feel like they could participate. In that way. So,
And then Facebook Live events, maybe.
Lots of Facebook Live events, We've seen, Black Pride, the National Black Pride Organization, had a great, you know, just kind of the impact of the COVID on Black Prides that they did out of Atlanta, but they had people participating. And Sean Bumpazi, who's the leader of Kentucky Black Pride here in Lexington and Louisville, was a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he posted it. Now, it was really great to be able to... You know, the nice thing is it really does bring people together from all over the country.
Right.
You know,
it's
like you're in the same room to be able to share what's happening and the experiences people are having and that sort of thing. So, and there have been several events like that that I've been really happy to be able to share with our people as well.
I have to see if that's still on Facebook.
Look
that up. Well, we've kind of covered most of the things. I guess we should sort of end by talking about sort of where you see things going over the next few months or over the next year.
Yeah, so for us, I'm really grateful to be sitting here. Like right now, I think we're in a good financial position, and I didn't know, you know, even 3 months ago,
yeah,
what that was going to look like. So we have gotten a grant from the city to support our food bank, and I see that growing, and working, you know, in collaboration with other groups in the city.
Right.
And our next focus was that we don't check your gender or sexuality to participate in that program.
Right.
But at the same time, I do want to start targeting to make sure that all of the people in the LGBTQ community know that this is a resource. And
yeah,
part of the reasoning that behind this and the research we've done is that folks in our community often won't use other resources if they
yeah
don't feel safe. And
right,
if, and you know, one of the reasons I always go back to this, one of our regular group attendees and volunteers was sitting in a meeting one night, and even this was before we started a formal program, but we always kept food around because we knew we had kids, we had young people,
right,
who
just
always
kidding
needed
yeah
food.
Yeah.
And she said, "I'm just so grateful that when I don't have enough to eat, I can come here and I know that I can pick up some extra and nobody's judging me. It's like
mm-hmm
just being with family."
Right.
And
right,
so that was our whole, like, we just wanted to create this feeling of,
yeah,
you know us, we know you. Like, we're here to help.
Right,
yeah.
Right, yeah.
And so we plan to hire a part-time person to just focus on that program.
Okay.
And hopefully be doing some, like, nutrition education with it,
okay,
and to help
awesome
people sign up for food stamps and other
yeah
things. So we're
yeah
help stabilizing
right
people's food situations,
yeah,
as well as continuing the program. And then also working with, like I said, the city of Lexington as a whole in response to COVID-19. Because everybody came out and started trying to feed people individually, there's now a collective of those groups trying to figure out how we can all work together
right
and support
okay
each other's work.
Okay.
So
yeah,
I really see that continuing
yeah
to be a force for us.
Yeah.
And we're also going to hire a full-time person to do... Right now, I'm really the only staff member, and so I do everything from the fundraising and the
right,
you know, executive-level stuff to answering phones. So we're going to have Pride Center manager who
okay
will come in and sort of do the frontline stuff of
yeah
greeting people and, you know, the
yeah
those kind of things, so that I can focus more on fundraising and relationship
right
building
right
and those
awesome
those bigger executive
awesome
issues. So right now, I mean, I think our challenges are to figure out more permanently how do we reconnect with people. And like I said, we don't have a firm answer to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we know the things that are working, but we have to do something with youth, I think.
Right,
and
right
one of the projects we have planned is for Just Fun Kentucky gave us a grant to do a youth drag camp.
Okay.
And so I know that's something that we've been talking about, whether we can do that safely here with a limited number of people or virtually, or if we want to do it both ways.
Yeah, okay.
So
that'll be in the summer, or?
You know, I don't, it won't be like a... It could be done on evenings and weekends.
I
so
see
it's like
okay
we're calling it a camp, but it's
right,
not
okay
necessarily going to have to take. So trying to find those kind of creative ways to reconnect with people. Oh, one thing that the Imperial Court of Kentucky just did for us is a drive-in drag show. So they used our parking lot out front. We got permission.
Oh, awesome.
And it was a huge success.
Yeah.
Like, every parking lot was full. They did 6-foot distancing. People
uh-huh
had to stay in their own,
uh-huh
in their cars, or they drew a little box at the
uh-huh
end of work where people
uh-huh
could go.
Uh-huh.
And then the drag performers just walked down the strip and stayed. You know, everybody wore masks. They
right
had these
right
cool transparent
right so
masks.
They just walked down the sidewalk.
Yeah, and people, you know, they have people with buckets, and that's the only people that would approach each other, or people could donate virtually on Venmo.
Yeah.
It was fabulous. It
yeah
was absolutely, and I think that's something that will, I mean, everybody had a good time.
Yeah.
And it also, I think whenever we do drag shows outside of a bar, it opens it up to a different,
right,
you know,
right,
for young
true
people,
true,
for people who
true
wouldn't necessarily be comfortable in a
yeah
bar setting.
Yeah.
But we had people walking by who stopped, you know,
yeah, sure
to join and become a part of the audience, and, you know, cars would slow down
yeah, yeah
to see what was going
yeah
on. So that was definitely a hit. And I
yeah
think we'll do more of
that's
that
awesome
and finding ways. I said, I you know, wish we had thought of getting a drive-in theater to do Pride, because that
yeah
would be the perfect.
That's true. Those are in high demand now.
Yeah.
Or...
Yeah. And so
when did you do that?
That was just last weekend.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, but I mean, I know everybody was thrilled that it turned out so well.
Yeah,
I got such
yeah
great reviews.
Yeah.
So I think that we'll be looking at doing more here, and they're even going to look for bigger drive-in venues, because it really works. I mean, you
yeah
can really safely stay away from people, but you still have a group kind
right
of
right
feeling of connection around
right
it.
That's
yeah
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the other things for us, so we'll be bringing on new staff members, and you know, one of our biggest challenges will be, what does our normal programming look again?
Right.
And I just don't think we're there yet, so
right.
we're still trying to kind of do, we're here, letting people know we're here. If you need us, come in, talk to us. We can't do this group yet. I mean, some of my plans are to follow up individually with our different groups to see what options people are comfortable with, or
right,
what
right.
we're just, we have to get in the mindset of changing how
right.
we do things. We are
right.
going to get, but our senior group is what I'm particularly
right.
Interested in. So I would like, for one, to expand our grocery program. Right now we don't have enough volunteers to do that, but I think once we bring in some new staff to coordinate that, we will. And also some groups have what they call friendly visitor programs,
mm-hmm.
and I think this is the time to do that.
Yeah.
And so you just have volunteers who are sort of matched up with folks who can't get out of the house, and you know, right now, whether it would be phone calls or actual visit, you know, but you do have someone regularly
right.
checking
come
on
by.
And developing
yeah.
friendships with
great.
People, and that's something that like we'll push to bring
yeah.
that online.
Okay.
We've got to figure out, you know, again with the, with kids, what we're gonna do, and
yeah.
kind of
yeah.
take a stand on some way of
yeah. Yeah.
doing
yeah.
something. So we have thought it, you know, while it's not too cold, of doing some outside events and maybe bringing back people together.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are also starting a family group, a group for LGBTQ families. And it will be whether kids or parents or LGBTQ, but just to have, we just are launching an initial survey
okay.
to find out what kind of activities people want to do
right,
and who's
right.
interested. And then
right.
in the next couple months, we hope to do some kind of initial meeting,
right,
whether
right.
it's outside, in person.
Right,
or,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
and then
or
the
knows?
Other big thing we're working on that I haven't mentioned, and I don't know where it falls in here, but we are also doing, and this was before COVID, but we actually had to update it a little, is a statewide survey of LGBTQ wellness. And so once COVID hit, we added a question about COVID.
Oh,
but
yeah,
yeah
okay.
and that's out there on Facebook, and we're going to be pushing that out in other places too.
Oh, I think so. Is that, are you doing with that with someone? Or
Just Fund Kentucky funded it, and we're doing it with Bluegrass Black Pride.
Okay.
So they're the other. They
is that,
actually
is that the one on your website?
Mm-hmm.
You linked to that.
It should be. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And then yeah, our goal is to get responses from every county in Kentucky.
Yeah, well.
So we did the initial release, and now we're going to start digging in. And
I'd be interested to
yeah.
see what you find
yeah.
with that whenever you.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's very cool. I don't know if there's anything else that we're.
The only other way I can say that we're adapting is with working with our interns. So far this year, the social work programs have, you know, are letting
right.
people be here in person, but we do have like at least one intern who isn't comfortable. So trying to find ways to work virtually
right.
with
right.
people on an
yeah.
ongoing basis
yeah.
has also been. I'm happy to work with it. Some people are like,
not so much.
One of our supervisors is like, I don't know about doing social work. Just or I don't like, well,
right.
you
right.
don't want anybody to be sick. You know.
Yeah, it is tough.
Yeah,
but it sounds like the organizations may emerge stronger.
I really think so. I mean,
yeah.
one of the things we've seen with the People's Market program, we have definitely learned a lot. And I think some of the things that we've done during the pandemic, we will keep.
Yeah.
You know, we
yeah.
found ways to make that happen better and to reach more people
yeah. Yeah.
that we weren't doing beforehand.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we would have if we weren't pushed to
yeah.
grow
right.
the program quickly.
Right. Right.
So, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So
in the end, it might turn out.
It was
for the better.
For the
ways.
Better in
the,
in the
ways.
Long run.
Yeah,
yeah, in the long run.
But well, we can end it there.
Okay.
Is there anything else?
No, I think
thank
that's
you.
It. Yeah.